Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 45, Text 29. The verse is on the board. Tata cha labda samskaro dvijatvam prapya su rato garga yadu kulacharya gayatram ratam astito tatascha labda samskaro dvijatvam prapya su rato garga yadu kulacharya Gayatram Ratam Astito. The meaning. Tata. Then. Cha. And. Labda. Having received. Samskaro. Initiation. Dijatvam. Twice born status. Prapya. Attaining. Suvrato, sincere in their vows. Garga, from Garga Muni. Yadukula, of the Yadu dynasty. Acharya, from the spiritual master. Gayatam, of celibacy. Ratam, the vow. Astito, assumed. After attaining twice born status through initiation, the Lord, sincere in their vows, took the further vow of celibacy from Garga Muni, the spiritual master of the Yadus, responsibly. After attaining twice born status through initiation, the Lord's sincere in their vows, took the further vow of celibacy from Garga Muni, the spiritual master of the Yadus. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Both Sridhar Swami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explained the term Gayatam Ratam as a vow of brahmachari or celibacy in student life. Krishna and Balaram were playing the part are perfect students on the path of self-realization. Of course, in the modern age, degraded age, student life has become a vile, animalistic affair filled with illicit sex and drugs. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyanam Janashalakya Chakshuram Militanyenam Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Savitamena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kramayam Rati Swaha Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamlan Shri Gurun Vaishnavamstra Lada Samskaro Dijaton Prepaso Rato Gargad Yadu Kulacharya Gayatam Ratam Astito. So we are continuing to read the Lord's childhood pastimes. The nature of spiritual subject matter is you can discuss day and night and not get tired. Sometimes or often the materialists ask us, you chant the holy name every day, don't you get tired? And when they're informed no, they get surprised, because the concept of material life is, and the experience of material life is, with everything material, you get tired at a certain point. But spiritual sound emanating from the spiritual world, being transcendental nature, is never tiring. Similarly, when we hear about the Lord's pastimes, you see that the Lord's pastimes are discussed so thoroughly and you don't get tired. Like in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, for example, you read about the dialogue that took place between Lord Kapila Dev and his mother Devahuti. That dialogue and exchange extends itself into 11 chapters of the Bhagavatam. 11 chapters, you imagine, and still you don't get tired. That is because of the spiritual nature of spiritual subject matters. So, in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam, Narada Muni gives a nice example in this connection. Narada Muni was explaining to the Prachetas, and the Prachetas were the sons of King Prachinna Parishad, who had pleased the Lord by their austerities. So Narada Muni was giving them spiritual instructions, and he said, just like every day we breathe fresh air, do you ever feel, oh, I had this experience yesterday, so today I should not go for fresh air? You look forward to getting fresh air, isn't it? You get up in the morning when you want to open your windows and get some fresh air. Every day you eat prasad, you never say, oh, I had prasad for so many days. So spiritual subject matter similarly is always ever fresh. Just like in this chapter 45, we are reading about Krishna's pastimes as a student and as a disciple of Sandipani Muni. So we should develop a taste for hearing. And the whole purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam class and the Bhagavad Gita class is to help us get a taste for hearing. And as you get a taste for hearing, the influence of the illusory energy will begin to decline. Here we are reading about the pastime of the Lord getting his second initiation. Vasudeva, his father, arranged for the Brahmanas to come and give his son second initiation, or what is the second initiation also called? Brahmanical initiation. Again, in the fourth canto, Narada Muni explains to the Prachetas that a civilized human being has three births. How many? The first birth is called Shokra Janma. Shokra means semen, and Shokra Janma means birth as a result of seminal discharge. And this birth, as you know, is common both to human beings and to animals. So to just take a human birth and die after Shokra Janma alone is no achievement. The animals also go to the same path. The second birth is realized when one gets initiated and in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And this birth is called Savitra Janma. Savitra Janma is the second birth that we realize, and that is into the chanting of the holy name. And the third birth is mantra, and this is called Yagika Janma. So, Vasudeva, Krishna preaches by example. Yesterday we had a nice seminar where the main theme was the leaders at all levels should be exemplary. So the Lord preaches by example. And as we read the third verse, the verse from the third chapter of Gita, Krishna says, whatever great men do, others will follow. So if the great men are God-conscious, society will also be God-conscious. Just like when Lord Ramachandra was ruling over the planet, he was completely God-conscious. Thou the Supreme Lord, he was playing the role of an idol monarch. And as an idol monarch, he would personally supervise even minute details. The cleaning of the roads of Ayodhya. That's no big job, isn't it? But he would make sure that the roads were all cleaned properly with scented water every day. And then he would often go in disguise to see if the population had any shortcoming, any complaints against his regime. These days, if you criticize the government, in many countries you end up in jail. I was just in Burma last week, and in Burma they had a military government at one time. Even now they have a military government, but now they're gradually opening up a bit. So the devotees were telling me, Burma is an amazing country. It's full of monasteries. I was told that in that country there were 500,000 monks. And I said, they took me to the principal monastery of that country. It was 3,000 years old. But if you look at it, it looks as if it was built only yesterday. Full of coal. They really worship Buddha. So the devotees told me that when the army was at its peak and the monks were protesting against the government's rule, so many of these monks were killed. The military told them, either you shut up or others will shoot you. So in many parts of the world, you have a system of government where they can't stand any criticism, isn't it? Any suggestion, any opposition. Even today, there are some countries of the world where if you criticize, you end up in jail. But Lord Ram was so concerned about the welfare of the citizens that he would go in disguise to see and stand in front of people's homes and see, do they have any complaints? This is an idol garment. So in the Vedic history, you read about so many idol examples. There was once a king called King Rantideva. King Rantideva was noted for being very magnanimous, very charitable, very compassionate. So once the demigods wanted to test him, this king had fasted for 48 days. He and his wife both. And they had nirjal fast, didn't take a drop of water or sweets or anything. And as he was about to break his fast, a hungry brahmana walked into his palace, rang the bell. In the Vedic days, any citizen could get an audience with a king. It's not that, like in today's environment, it's almost impossible to get an audience with a king or the ruler. Of course, I must say, in your country it's a lot easier. But in India or America, it's almost impossible. You can get their audience or darshan only in television or at election time. Otherwise, they remain withdrawn. So, this brahmana walked into the king's palace, and the king, and he said, I'm hungry, king. It's your duty to feed the citizens. And the king gave him a little bit of the foodstuff that he had that he and his wife were going to take. Then another Chandala walked in. Another Sudra walked in. And ultimately the king was left with nothing. And then in the end a thirsty individual walked in. And the king even parted with the water he had. And then he offered a wonderful prayer to the Lord in which he said, "My dear Lord, nakamai ham gatim ishwarat param. I didn't want anything from you, but you may take all these conditioned souls back to Godhead and let me suffer the destined lot." This is a bit similar to, for thousands of years later, the mood expressed by Vasudeva Datta. Vasudeva Datta was a very magnanimous, compassionate devotee of the Lord. He was a householder. He had very meager incomes, but he would spend all his money in serving Vaishnavas. And the situation became so tight for his wife that she had to go to Lord Chaitanya and complain that my husband spends all his money in feeding the Vaishnavas and I don't have money to run the house. So then Lord Chaitanya had to appoint Shivananda Sen as his financial manager to make sure that his wife had enough money to run the house for the whole month. So Vasudeva Datta once went to the Lord and said, "My dear Lord, I want to ask you a favor. First, you please guarantee me that you're going to grant this favor." The Lord said, "Sure, your desire will definitely be fulfilled by Krishna." And what was the favor that Vasudeva Datta asked for? Who knows? "Please take all the conditioned souls back to Godhead. Let me suffer the destined lot." So King Granthideva composed a prayer that you read in the Bhagavatam where he expresses the mood that, "My dear Lord, I don't want any type of liberation. All I want is the facility to suffer the reaction due to others and you may take everyone back to God." That's one example. There was another magnanimous king called Maharaj Sibi. And once the demigods decided to test him, even with King Rantideva, the demigods had assumed different roles in order to test his magnanimous and charitable nature. But King Rantideva was known for being very magnanimous and charitable. So one of the demigods took the role of a pigeon, and one took the role of an eagle. And the pigeon came running into the palace of Maharaj Sibi. And the king said, the pigeon said, "King, your duty is to protect your citizens." When we talk about citizens in Vedic dictionary, we mean the entire population. Today when you talk of citizens of a country, what do they mean? Just the human beings, minus the animals. The animals are meant for slaughtering, so they don't count. But in the Vedic dictionary, the king is responsible for the entire population. So one of them took on the role of a eagle, one took on the role of a pigeon. The eagle came running to the king saying, "Please protect me." And a little later, the eagle followed. The eagle said, "Did the pigeon come here?" "I want to eat that pigeon. You have no right to protect that pigeon." And the king said, "This pigeon has come to me for protection. I cannot release the pigeon to you. But I'll give you the flesh from my body." And so he agreed to give the flesh from his body. And by the transcendental arrangement of the Lord, the weight of the pigeon went on increasing. Still the king did not go back on his promise. Ultimately, the demigods were pleased by his sacrifice and they revealed their identity and restored the flesh on his body. So there's so many examples. Even very recently in history, we had an example of King Prataparudra, who was a very exemplary devotee of the Lord. Lord initially denied any audience to the king. The king was very keen to get an audience with the Lord, and he sent his messengers. He communicated through Lord Nityananda, but still the Lord would refuse an audience. But when the Lord saw his compassionate and humble nature, on the occasion of Rath Yatra, the king would personally sweep the floor on which the Lord's chariot would have to be filled full. And the Lord was so pleased by his humility, seeing the king perform the role of a menial servant, cleaning the streets. Who cleans the streets of Marie? They clean the streets here? Yeah. Yeah, sure. So menial servants do that, isn't it? So the king was playing the role of a sweeper for Lord Jagannath's pleasure. And the king and the Lord was very pleased by this humility. And he revealed his transcendental pastime. On the occasion of Rath Yatra, the Lord would organize 8 kirtan parties with each chariot. They would be 4 in the front, 1 in the left, 1 in the right, and 2 in the back. And the Lord had commissioned the senior devotees in each of these parties. And he himself was simultaneously dancing in all these chariot parties at the same time. But only his selected devotees could see this. And one of them was King Pratapuruta. And why? Because the Lord was pleased by his humility. So the Lord preaches by example. And over here we see that the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his brother Balaram, they are preaching by example. They have taken second initiation from the Brahmanas. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Chaturvarna Maya Sisham Guna Karma Vibhagasaha. According to the Guna, it is ascertained which Varna or Ashram one belongs to. So Brahminical order, Brahminical initiation, one gets on the basis of qualification. Prabhupada was very revolutionary in many things he did. For example, he gave initiations to females. He gave them even Brahminical initiation. When Prabhupada came to India with his Western disciples for the first time, many of the Goswamis of Vrindavan began to say, oh, Bhaktivinoda Swami has ruined our culture. He's given them lectures, second initiation also. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the first great acharya who preached boldly that one becomes a Brahmin, not on the basis of birth, but on the basis of qualification. There was this long-held perception in the Hindu society. The Brahmana is by birth, not by qualification. And birth was a prime factor. And Bhaktisiddhanta ji was very bold. He was so bold that the Brahmanas were so offended by him that they even conspired to kill him. Prabhupada told us a story that the Brahmanas even approached the local police and said, we're going to do something, don't take action. But he was very bold. Thakur Bhaktivinoda in his old age was once invited to a Brahminical Sabha to give a discourse. Being indisposed, he sent his son Bhaktisiddhanta to speak in the auditorium. And Bhaktisiddhanta was a great orator. He was like a walking encyclopedia. In the age of 5, he had mass memorized the whole Bhagavad Gita. So Bhaktisiddhanta ji started his lecture by quoting verses praising the role of Brahmanas, which greatly alive in everyone. But then Bhaktisiddhanta went on to point out that one becomes a brahmana not on the basis of birth, but on the basis of qualification, which greatly angered the audience. So Bhaktisiddhanta was the first acharya who preached that one becomes a brahmana on the basis of qualification. And Srila Prabhupada, fulfilling the mood of his Guru Maharaj, also established that one becomes a brahmana on the basis of qualification. And what is the qualification of a brahmana? This is very nicely explained in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in that famous text 42 of the 18th chapter. What does Krishna say? Samo dhamo tapo sojam shanti rajam evacha jnanam vijnanam astikya brahma karma svakaja. Shavo, a brahmana must be peaceful. In the 10th canto you read that when Rukmini was about to be married against her wishes to whom? Shishupala. She sent a brahmana with a message to Krishna. Please save me, rescue me. My brother is going to get me married to Shishupala. Krishna received the brahmana, washed his feet in an exemplary manner. As he said, the Lord preaches by example. How the Lord deals with brahmanas is also exemplary. Krishna washed his feet. We know the famous story of Sudama Brahman. So, and then Krishna asked the brahmana, is your mind peaceful? And then Krishna said, unless your mind is peaceful, it's hard to pursue spiritual life. So, a brahmana should be peaceful, and a brahmana is peaceful in every situation, comfortable or uncomfortable. And therefore it is said, brahmana should be shamo, he should be peaceful. Then self-control, dhammo. Brahmana must also have control over his body, mind and senses. You can't be a brahmana with a brahmin thread and then have a degraded character. And we can have self-control provided we follow the process of devotional service. Then there must be tapo. We're going to discuss these qualities again in the context of brahmacharya description. Then there must be tapo, austerity. There must be socham, purity. Prabhupada often said, what is the famous slogan Prabhupada gave? Purity is the force. Prabhupada emphasized that purity is important for pursuing spiritual life. To pursue spiritual life, you don't need some big academic qualification. If you have it, fine, but that's not a requisite. You don't need to have certain very good looks. You don't have to have a very melodious voice or be a great orator. You just need the desire to serve the Lord and willingness to practice principles that will contribute to our development of purity. So, brahmana is one of the qualities of socham, purity. Then, there must be tolerant, shanta. Lord Chaitanya emphasizes the quality of tolerance. And this quality of tolerance is mentioned in several shlokas in our scriptures. Brahmana must be tolerant. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu encourages us to develop tolerance in the famous verse of the Sikshasya. Tinada Visuni Chena Rura Pisaina Amanina Manadina Kitanati Sarari. When Lord Chaitanya advises to be more tolerant even than a tree. So similarly, in mature life, there will be happiness, distress, victory, defeat, honor, dishonor. But a devotee should be undisturbed and be tolerant. And in the second chapter of the Gita, Krishna gives that famous verse. What is that? Matras parashtu kaunteya. Hitoshna Sukha Dukha Na. So one should recognize, just like the winter and summer seasons come and go, there will also be this duality of material existence, and we should not be disturbed in any condition. We see the example of Prahlad Maharaj, and we see so many other examples of devotees who had to undergo extreme difficulties. The Pandavas, the difficulties they had to face were so great. Even Bhishmadev, in his final days, said he could not understand why the Pandavas had to undergo so much suffering. So the point is, the devotee should be tolerant. And in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, in the dialogue between Kapila Dev and Devahuti, Devahuti, being the mother of the Lord, knowing that her son was none else but the incarnation of the personality of Godhead, she said, "I am an ignorant woman, and you are my transcendental eye. You are the axe that can uproot the tree of ignorance. So please enlighten me." And in response to Devahuti's question, the Lord was very pleased, just like you see in the Bhagavatam, when Parikshit Maharaj questioned, Shukadeva Goswami, as to what one should do who is about to die. Shukadeva Goswami was very pleased, and he proceeded to explain the Srimad Bhagavatam. So just like when you meet somebody who says, "Come on, can I have a book? Can you explain Krishna consciousness to me?" You feel very satisfied, you know. So Lord Kapila was very pleased when he heard this inquiry from his mother. And he explains the importance of devotee association. And he further proceeds to describe the qualities of a devotee. And in describing the qualities of a devotee, what's the first quality he mentions? Titikshava Karunikaha Surda Sarva Dhainam Vajita Shatrava Sandha Sadva Sadha Bhushana. He explains the qualities of a devotee. And the first is there's tolerance. So a devotee should be tolerant. And tolerance and humility are also described as one of the essential ingredients for surrendering to the Lord. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you read about Lord Chaitanya instructing Sanatana Goswami on the six principles of surrender. And what is the sixth principle of surrender? Humility and tolerance. So a Brahmana should be tolerant. Then he must have honesty, and he must have knowledge, and he must apply that knowledge in practice. So here we see that the Supreme Lord and his brother, they have taken second initiation, and we briefly discussed the qualities of a Brahmana. We didn't discuss in length. And the Supreme Lord over here also took along with his brother the vow of, what's it mentioned? Celibacy. He also took from the vow of celibacy from Garga Muni, the spiritual master of the Yadus. And in the purport, Prabhupada explains the Gayatam Rata means the vow of brahmacharya celibacy in student life. Because Krishna and Balram were playing the role of perfect students. And because they were playing the role of perfect students, they also took the vow of celibacy or brahmacharya life. And the Lord was, and they took their vow. Why? Because by taking these vows, as Prabhupada says in the purport, you can progress on the path of self-realization. And if you don't take any vows, then you can't make any progress. And therefore in the purport, Prabhupada comments That not like today's student life, where the students are completely degraded. Today, there is no discipline in these campuses or in the schools. Today you have situations way from the age of 7 or 8, students get exposed to almost everything obscene and vulgar. And from the age of 10, 11, they begin to drink, take drugs, engage in free mixing and so on. So if you get exposed to and you practice and indulge in sinful activities from a young age, where is the question of growing up with any character or morality, etc.? That's why, as we were explaining last night, society today is in such a degraded situation. Because students don't get any training. Here we see that Krishna and Balaram took the vows of celibacy or brahmacharya from Garga Muni. So, if we want to succeed in spiritual life, then one should take these vows. Therefore, we have this system of Gurukul education, where from a young age, the child is trained in spiritual discipline. And in the 6th canto of the Bhagavatam, the very nice statement by Parikshit, by Shukadeva Goswami, where he says, tapasa brahmacharena samena cha dhamena cha sagena satya sochabhyam yamena niyamena cha. So this is a very famous verse that describes the mentality of a brahmacharya. And in the purport of the this famous verse of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explains that one who has taken the vow of celibacy, whether it's brahmacharya or sannyasi, one should not think that if I'm not a brahmacharya or sannyasi, then I have a free license for anything. You should recognize that even if one is in the household or ashram, there has to be strict spiritual discipline if you want to make spiritual advancement. Therefore, we have two situations. One is grihastha, and the other is grihamedi. Grihastha is a situation where the husband and wife live according to spiritual directions with the goal of self-realization. And grihamedi is a situation where they live together for the purpose of sense enjoyment. So grihastha is an ashram when the husband and wife realize that our goal is self-realization and going back to Godhead. So with regards to brahmacharya life or sannyasi life, there has to be strict discipline. So Krishna and Balaram took the vows of celibacy from Garga Muni. And in the Bhagavatam it is explained what are the vows of celibacy, or how a brahmachari, what type of vows he should take. So tapasa brahmacharena. A brahmachari or sannyasi must believe in the principles of tapasya. And tapasya is a situation where you voluntarily renounce what is detrimental in favor of what is conducive. And tapasya is the strength to make spiritual advancement. Tapasya gives you the strength to make spiritual advancement. In the third canto of the Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma explains, tapaseva param jyotir bhagavatam adhokshajam. That the Supreme Lord is a dhokshaja, difficult to comprehend, but through the medium of austerity one can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes people want to know that if I perform austerity, What will I get in exchange? Is there any benefit in exchange for austerity? What's the benefit? Lord Rishabhdev explains this. In the famous verse he says, Naham deha deha bhajam raloke. He says, my dear sons, do not use this human life to the animals. What you should use it for? Tapo devyam putraka yena sattva. Shada yena smad ramya sokhyam anandam. Use this human life for performing austerities for the pleasure of the Lord. And if you use this life for the pleasure of the Lord, in exchange for that, you will get unending spiritual happiness. He specifically uses the word unending spiritual happiness. That means that somebody undergoes austerities, in exchange for that, he will get real happiness. And material happiness, even if you become Bill Gates, for example, it has a beginning and an end, isn't it? You're not going to live on eternally. A point's going to come. You have the genius founder of Apple, Steve Jobs. He was brilliant. He virtually was everyone acknowledges he was the most intelligent man in his field. But how long could he live? So we can see that doesn't matter how powerful you are, how famous you are, how strong you are, it's all temporary. Whereas, in exchange for austerity, for the pleasure of the Lord, you realize happiness, which is always increasing. Prabhupada used to say that if you stand on the bank of the shore, the waves of the ocean have a limit. But there's no limit to the waves of the spiritual ocean. They get higher and higher and higher. So there should be no hesitation in our heart regarding tapasya. We should recognize that if I want to make spiritual advancement, then austerity is an essential ingredient. Doesn't matter which ashram of life you belong to. Then tapasa brahmacharina. So brahmachari or someone who wants, or sannyasi, who wants to make spiritual advancement, he must perform tapasya. Samena. Samena means controlling the mind. And in this connection, in the purport of this verse, Prabhupada explains that how one can control the mind. For example, it says, don't think about sex life. If you think about sex life, you naturally get attached. Don't mix freely with the opposite sex. And by following these guidelines, you will be able to follow or save yourself from undesirable activities. And one of the important rules is samena, controlling the mind. And what helps you to control the mind? Attentive chanting the holy names of the Lord. And as we discussed yesterday, if the mind is positively engaged, then you can be protected from undesirable activities. Then, dhamena means controlling the senses. So, what does it mean, controlling the senses? Means you practically engage the senses in positive activities. We have the classic example of Amrish Maharaj, how he revealed that the senses can be used. Amrish Maharaj gave the example, used his legs to walk to the temple of the Lord, used his eyes to see the beautiful form of the Lord, used his hands to sweep the temple of the Lord, use his head to bow down before the Lord, use his tongue to vibrate the glories of the Lord and to take Krishna Prasad. So, Samena Cha, Dhamena Cha, The senses need engagement. And therefore, in the Narada Pancharatna, it is said, Sarva Padi Vinir Muktam Tatpirvena Nirmalam Rishikina Rishikina Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. Our Krishna conscious process is the senses cannot be artificially locked up. The senses need constant engagement, and we engage them in a positive way. Tagena Satya Sochabhyam. Tagena means giving in charity. So someone may say, what do we have to give in charity, especially a brahmachari and sannyasi? What do we have to give in charity? Do you have something to give in charity? We have big bank balances. We give in charity transcendental knowledge. Just like in the 18th chapter of text 3, Krishna says, three things should never be given up. What are they? Dana, yajna. Don't give up charity, dana. So, Tyagena means to give in charity. And a brahmachari, sannyasi, or any transcendentalist, what does he give in charity? He gives in charity transcendental knowledge, because this is the great need of society. Then satya. Satya means truthfulness. Brahmachari, sannyasi should also practice truthfulness. Truthfulness begins with our following the instruction of the Lord truthfully. And at least in dealing with devotees, we should practice truthfulness. And if we have made a mistake, we can acknowledge the mistake, but we should practice the principles of truthfulness. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains the austerity of the tongue, the mind, and the body. And in describing the austerity of the tongue, what does Krishna say? Speak words that are truthful. So one of the austerities of the tongue is to speak words that are truthful, because we are so used to speaking nothing but lies. So then another austerity of the tongue is to regularly recite Vedic literature. So we regularly recite Vedic literature, regularly recite the holy names of the Lord. And then another austerity of the tongue is to speak the truth, but speak it in a pleasing manner. In other words, be humble in the way you talk. Not that we speak arrogantly, insulting manner, etc. Therefore, Krishna's way says, speak words that are truthful, and speak words, what did he say? Who knows? In a pleasing manner. In other words, speak the truth, but speak it sweetly. Not that you speak the truth in a very aggressive manner. Just like in the Bhagavatam, second canto, there's a verse, Swavid Vara Hosta Kare. Those who are materialistic are like dogs, horses, camels, and asses. So, if you go and speak to an audience, dear dogs, horses, camels, and asses, please listen to me. Probably everyone's going to walk out. So speak the truth, speak it in a truthful manner, in a pleasing manner, just like we saw in Prabhupada's life. Prabhupada met people of all walks of life. He was very firm in his philosophical presentation, but he was very sweet and pleasing. So even if anyone walked away, he may not have agreed with the philosophy, but he agreed that he was a gentleman. So similarly, a devotee should be very gentlemanly and humble in his presentation. We don't compromise on the truth, but we present the truth in a very pleasing, amicable way. So, Sochabhyam, he follows the regulated principles for cleanliness. Just like in our Krishna conscious movement, we have so many rules and regulations that we follow. Why do we follow these rules and regulations? A, they're given to us by the Lord and the Acharyas. B, they are necessary for our purification. These regulated principles that we follow, they become the pillars of spiritual life when we follow them. And when you indulge in them, they become the pillars of material, sinful life. Then Yamena. Yamena means avoiding violence. The nature of a devotee is he doesn't want to harm even an And in the fifth canto you have the example of Jat Bharat. How Jat Bharat was so concerned that he would not even place his feet on the ground till he made sure that at least for the next 3 feet there was no entity on the ground, isn't it? So a devotee, especially Brahmachari, Sannyasi, or anyone, avoids all types of violence, yamena. And in the story of Mrigari, the hunter, you read how this very dangerous, sinful Mrigari got purified by Narada Muni's association to the point that he would not even place his feet on the ground till he made sure there was no one that he would step over. So yamena, he avoids cursing and violence. Yamena, he regularly chants the holy name of the Lord. So we regularly chant the holy name of the Lord. Why? Because by regularly chanting the holy name, we can cleanse our heart of material misgivings. So Krishna and Balaram, they took a second initiation. They took second initiation, and over here we see the Lord is preaching by example. As I said earlier, whatever great men do, others will follow. But then they went beyond that. It's not that they took second initiation and thought, now everything's finished. They further took the vows of celibacy in student life. And so we describe what the vows of celibacy really mean. And they took the vows of celibacy because they wanted to guide us how in future, if you want to make spiritual advancement, how we should be prepared to take these vows of celibacy. Therefore we have the Gurukul system of education. We have where from the age of 5 the child is taught about spiritual life, the importance of spiritual life. Why? Because human life is very rare, and then one must cultivate spiritual life from a young age. So if you're serious about spiritual advancement, of course there are very rigid guidelines for brahmacharis and sannyasis. But even if one is in a grihastha ashram and he wants to make spiritual advancement, in the grihastha ashram you may have some concession, but basically the basic principle remains the same, that you must control your mind and senses if you want to make spiritual advancement. And we can control our mind and senses if we follow the process of Vaidhi Bhakti strictly. And if Vaidhi Bhakti is a process where you follow rules and regulations, and the foundation for a spiritual life depends upon our attentive chanting of the holy names of the Lord. The holy name chanting is beneficial in any situation, but the chanting of the holy name is most beneficial if it's chanted attentively. There are, as you know, 3 stages of chanting the holy names of the Lord. There is the offensive stage, the state of minimizing offenses, and shudhanam, purified chanting. So at least we should be attentive in our chanting of the holy name. In the 10th offense, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains, has 2 aspects to the 10th offense. The second aspect is, as Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explained, to be inattentive in chanting. So when we sit down to do our japa, our goal should be to be attentive in chanting. And often devotees want to know, what does it mean, attentive chanting? So in summary, attentive chanting means that at least when you're sitting down to do a quota of chanting of 16 rounds, 25 rounds of Ekadasi, another auspicious day, only focus on your chanting and nothing else. Not that you're doing a chanting and answering your cell phones and doing 10 other things at the same time. And you will find that the more attentive you are in your chanting, the faster will be the cleansing of the heart, the faster will be spiritual advancement. Bhakti Siddhanta Ji was once asked, how is it that some people make more rapid advancement than others? Because you see, even in a Krishna conscious movement, sometimes you see candidates who are new to spiritual life and they're making rapid advancement. And on the other hand, you see those who've been around for a long time and they may not be making rapid advancement. So this question was asked to Bhakti Siddhanta Ji, and he replied by revealing the story of the marriage party. It's a famous story, so you're not going to hear it for the first time. So the marriage party hired a boat and gave money to the boatmen, saying this is where they wanted to reach tomorrow morning. And in the morning they discovered that the boat was still exactly where it was the previous night. The groom's party was naturally upset, and the boatman was surprised. He said, I was rowing all night, I didn't know why the boat didn't move. Till they discovered, what did they discover? The anchor was stuck to the harbor, he forgot to take it out. So we have to take out our anchor from mutual attraction if we want the boat of spiritual life to sail forward. And in these sources of devotees, especially taking advantage of Shravanam Kirtanam, we have all the weapons to overcome Maya. Krishna says, Devyesha Gunamaya Mama Maya Duradaya. To overcome this illusory energy is very difficult. But then he also adds, if you surrender to me, then you can overcome. And what does surrender to Krishna mean? Following the guidelines in the verse that we just read, and following the spiritual standards. And that will help us to make spiritual advancement. And in our Krishna conscious movement, we are so fortunate. We have all the ammunition that you need to fight Maya. You have the wonderful books that Prabhupada left. You have the instructions. You have so many sadhus, sannyasis, traveling, giving association. It's kind of like a big family in which you have so much opportunity. You have beautiful temples all over the world. You can go to any city in the world virtually with a Hare Krishna temple. If you don't have a temple, you at least have a community of devotees. So Prabhupada's created, once Prabhupada went to an astrologer before he went to the West, and the astrologer said, you will build a house in which the whole world can live. So he did build that house. He built that house in ISKCON, where virtually the whole world is living and can live. And it all depends upon our determination to practice and preach. If we all become active in preaching, there is virtually no end to the number of people who can join and take to Krishna consciousness. We have seen all over the world, even in difficult situations, where the local devotees are active in preaching, etc., the conditions always join. And if you're not so active, then they join in slow numbers. So, to summarize the verse, we see that the Lord and his brother, they just got initiated into the chanting of the Gayatri Mantra. And they also begged Garga Muni, the spiritual master of the Yadu dynasty, for vows of celibacy, which means following rules and regulations which are essential if we want to make spiritual advancement. So the Lord is showing my example, and further in this story you'll see how he worked hard to even please his guru. And the guru gave him an assignment that he knew that nobody else could fulfill. So the Lord teaches by example. And we should also preach by example. And the best example is to practice what we preach. I gave that story last night that there was once a mother with her son. and the son was suffering from diabetes, and the son just would not give up eating sweets. So the mother took the son to the guru and said, "Please order my son not to eat sweets anymore. He has such high diabetes." And the guru said, "Come back after 2 weeks." And after 2 weeks, when the mother took the son, the guru said, "Son, you should not eat sweets, it's bad for your health." And the son agreed instantly. He said, "Okay, Guruji, I won't eat sweets anymore." So the mother was shocked. She said, "I'm trying so hard to get my son to give up sweets, he won't starve." And 2 weeks ago, the guru wouldn't say anything. So she said, "Why didn't you give this instruction 2 weeks ago? Why did you make me come back?" And what did the guru say? 2 weeks ago, I was eating sugar also. So how could I tell him not to eat? So we have to practice what we preach. And if you practice what we preach, then our preaching will have great effect. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya said, a devotee must, by his behavior, convey the meaning of religious principles. So please take advantage of everything we have and be determined to make spiritual advancement. Hare Krishna. So any questions or... Yes. Sundara. Can you speak a little louder? It's a little hard to hear. Yeah. Follow the process given by Lord Chaitanya and our Acharyas. So just follow the process that Prabhupada gave us and you'll have no lamentation. You know, in previous times, the disciple would live in the ashram of the guru and the guru would be restricted to just one location, isn't it? Am I right? These days you have what you call jet age gurus. So, but the process works because of the unique structure that Prabhupada created in ISKCON, where you have local leadership in every temple, president, vice president, etc., and senior devotees. And in ISKCON, we work as a family in helping people make spiritual advancement. So Prabhupada gave us the system, so I don't know why that system wasn't practical anymore. Okay. Any other questions? Don't expect everything to happen the way you want it to happen. We all expect everything should go according to my plan. I should get the honor, I should get this, I should get that, I should get that. But we are not the controllers. Krishna is the ultimate controller. So even if you are dishonored, tolerate it. Take it as a means of purification and as a test from Krishna. I saw situations where somebody insulted Prabhupada and Prabhupada didn't get disturbed at all. Rather, he blessed that person, even though he wasn't insulting Prabhupada. So we don't believe in the philosophy of tooth for tooth. When Hindi they say, nail for nail, extremely tolerant. Yeah? Okay? Hare Krishna. I give the class tomorrow morning.
Yes. Maharaj, class? Yeah. De matin, class, pe ici. Și și vreau de acolo.